Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. Hello and welcome to this week's Sports Live podcast. Yeah, it's a week after we released the 50th anniversary tribute to Kaizer Chiefs. If you've missed that, please go to our podcast page on timeslive.co.za. Search for the multimedia tab. Go to podcasts where you will find the Sports Live podcast. Otherwise, use hashtag Sports Live on all social media and you will find all the links that I posted either on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So please go and check that out. It's the Kaizer Chiefs 50th anniversary tribute episode. It's featuring Kaizer Motaung Sr. as well as Lebohang Manyama. Two very special interviews within that episode. And we also did a nice little rejig of Sam Martin's article, which was in the Sowetan on the 10th of January this year. So please go and check that out if you haven't listened to it already. I think it's one of the timeless pieces that we have done as a podcast, scripted podcast, and I think it was a brilliant episode to start off. It was our first, and hopefully we're going to have a whole lot more of those coming up in the future. But in this episode, we are talking Olympics. Yeah, in less than 6 months' time, South Africa will be competing for medals in Tokyo. Are we going to actually be on the medals table, and how high? Yeah, we've had a few problems on the athletics and swimming side, and I've roped in somebody who knows more about the subject than I do, David Isaacson. He's one of the senior sports writers here at Arena Holdings. And David, welcome to the Sports Live podcast, first and foremost.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, man. It's a tough time, tough old time for athletics in South Africa or Olympic sports. What do you make of the Team South Africa's chances? I know it's still some way away. But it's definitely squeaky bum time still.
Well, yes. On paper, you're going to think we're going to struggle in Tokyo. But what's interesting is that historically, at every Olympics since readmission, track and field has always delivered at least one medal.
Okay.
So that is quite a promising statistic.
Yeah.
And I think we still got the goods to do it. Obviously, there's going to be, we're going to assume there's going to be no Caster Semenya, and Wade van Niekerk still has to prove his fitness. We don't know what he's going to do this season.
Yeah.
How he's come back from his injury. So take the two of them out, and you know, you've still got Luva Manyonga, Manyonga in the long jump. You've got Rishwal Samai in the long jump, and those two guys are capable of getting medals on their day. Akani Simbine in the 100 is a strong contender for a medal. Our 4x100 relay team, men's relay team, that's a contender
for a medal. Okay, now that you've brought that up, actually, one of the promising young sprinters is actually from King Williamstown, if I believe correctly, Nqelele Titi. He's US based. He's quit athletics altogether due to lack of funding. Isn't that going to impact our, you know, sprint hopes, especially in the 4x100?
Well, you know, we competed in Doha without him. I think part of the reason he quit was funding, but also a kind of like niggling injury that he just couldn't get rid of.
Right.
And so between the two, he pulled out, which of course is a pity. The deeper your pool, the better your chances. But even without him in Doha, that team came fifth. But that's included a terrible handover from, I think it was Simon Mahakwe to Clarence Boniai. So, yeah, I think that team has a lot of improvement. And if they're well drilled going into the Olympics, I think we can expect something from them. But obviously, you know, we can't afford for the Oaks who ran in Doha to get injured. You know?
So, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
How's Anaso Jobotwana looking?
Well, it's interesting. He's gone back to Altus, which is where he was based when he got his bronze in the 200 at the 2015 World Champs.
Okay.
And he's really been stuck in the wilderness since he came back from injury in 2016.
Yeah, yeah.
He's had the occasional race where he's shown a glimpse of what he's capable of, but he just hasn't got it together yet. So hopefully, you know, he can get it in time, having gone back to Altus. That would be a huge boost to South Africa.
Yeah.
But again, we have to see what he's going to bring.
Is it possible that we could rope him into the 4x100, or is the 100 meters completely out for him and is just focusing on the 200?
No, he's definitely... The thing about the 4x100 is you need a couple of 200 runners in the mix.
Oh, okay.
Because you need guys who can run the bend, etc.
Right.
I think Nassau's problem is that he hasn't covered himself in glory in the relays that he's taken part in.
Yeah.
Certainly, Commonwealth Games. He hasn't been brilliant on the handovers. You know, but again, that's something you can work on.
Yeah.
And if he's going to run sub 20 200s a season, if and listen, he hasn't done it for 5 years, but if he's going to do that, I think you might want him back in that relay team.
Now, with regards to relay, I think, was it in Rio where Team South Africa didn't know who was going to run the 4x100, and that impacted you know, stuff like the handover, the synergy between the runners and the sprinters. I mean, at what point, Who's in charge of A, making sure that, okay, look, these are the four guys, maybe with a fifth guy just in case there's an emergency or an injury or anything like that. Do the guys actually get together and train? Because you've got Anaso in Durban, you've got Simon Mahakwe is probably up in Gauteng. You've got guys training on their own individually, which they do. I mean, it's very individual athletics. And then how does it all come together? And isn't it a bit too late to then start working on your 4x100 at the tournament?
Well, historically, we've been bad putting these relay teams together.
Yeah.
It was a problem in 2015. It was a problem in 2016 when I think we actually didn't qualify a men's team
for
Rio.
Oh.
They didn't even get to Rio. 2017, nothing to write home about. 2018, we got the silver in Commonwealth.
Okay.
But only since 2018... ASA finally appointed a full-time relay manager in Paul Horries, who's a former relay runner himself, top SA sprinter. And with him, he's been organizing relay camps. And he's already got his date set out that he's drawn up, having spoken to the athletes. So there will be camps a few times in South Africa before this season switches to Europe, and then there'll be camps there. So by the time they get to Tokyo, they will hopefully be very well drilled, and they will have competed a couple of times, at least once or twice, in like Diamond League situations, you know, which is the best kind of practice you're going to get, I guess. So that's the one issue, and there should be at least five guys running it, because you're going to need someone to stand in, because the 200 final is the night before the 4x100 heats in Tokyo, and if Akani were to make the 200 final, and if Anaso's in form and he makes the 200 final, you can't have them running the heats the next morning.
Right.
Okay. So you're going
to need to give them a rest for
it. You have to rest them, but you need two guys in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, the Japanese and the Chinese have shown that a great relay team doesn't need four great sprinters.
You don't need like four Usain Bolts.
No, you just need four guys who can get their handovers done as quickly as possible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can do really, really well.
Yeah.
At least it should be enough to qualify the team for the final.
And at the very least. I mean, I think at some point behind Jamaica, we had a top three, maybe behind Jamaica and the US. We had like on paper that top three sprinting team. And somehow we just couldn't put it together.
Yeah, well, relays is practice.
Yeah.
It's not about the individual brilliance.
Right, right, right.
And we've
woken up to
that. It
doesn't matter what the individual times are. I think at some point we had four sprinters that had sub-10 times, individually sub-10, 100-meter times. And you got Akani, who's done it probably the most of any South African sprinter. And... But together, they just
Yeah. Well, the beauty of the relay is there's not actually four guys necessarily running 100 meters. Because of that area where you, the handover area.
Yeah.
You can have it that one guy's running closer to 90 meters, another guy's running a bit further. And so it becomes like quite a strategic game, but ultimately your handovers have to be quick. And the guys obviously want to get that baton flying as fast as they can.
And what happened in Doha? We came back. I mean, it's world champs. It's the year before the actual Tokyo Olympic Games. You know, usually, you know, the world champs will give you a little bit of a feel of how you're going to do. But like you say, historically, Team South Africa hasn't had the best prep ahead of Olympic Games or Games. And so what happened in Doha, first and foremost? And do we have enough time to rectify the performance that I thought was a bit of a disaster, to be honest?
You know, I don't know that the world champs was as bad as it looks in terms of the medals table. Okay. Yes, of course you want to win medals. But but in London, 2 years earlier, we got six medals. Which was our best performance.
Yeah.
So Wade wasn't there, Caster wasn't there. That's four medals gone.
Okay.
The other two medals were long jump, gold and bronze.
Mm,
mm. And those gold and bronze in Doha got fourth and fifth, which isn't train smash territory.
Right. Mm.
But the long jumpers are going to have to work hard this year because there's new talent coming through, and that's who kind of shocked them in Doha to some extent. But it's not impossible. You know, they've got time to get there.
Okay.
I mean, I think Luvo has taken the limelight because of his incredible natural talent.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, someone like Rash is a hard worker and should never be discounted.
Right. Okay.
So you've got that. Akani's fourth place in the 100.
Mm.
His top end speed in the final was nowhere near what it like should be and what it has been. And he got overhauled by Andre de Grasse.
Mm.
You know, let him get his top end speed right this season. And when it's mixed with his start that has improved substantially since like 2015, 2016, you know, he could be running sub 9.9, hopefully. Mm. And then that's medal territory.
Right, okay.
So, I mean, I'm very upbeat for someone like Akani because I think he's got a lot of room for improvement.
Okay, right.
So that's something.
On the women's side?
Oof. you see, look, outside the long jumpers and the sprinters, I'm afraid, I don't see too many opportunities for medals. On the women's side, Zanae in the 400 hurdles.
Yeah.
She is a great future talent, I think, but these Olympics are too early for her.
All right, okay.
And, you know, people like Clarence, Munyai, etc., also have yet to prove themselves at the highest level, but he's a very valuable member of the relay team. So, you know, even if you just come back with a relay medal, hell, I'm not going to complain.
None of us are, actually. Okay. If as long as we make some sort of significant contribution to the medals table. And it is a bit of pressure because of what we did in Rio, or what Wade did, and Luvo performing well, and, you know, how it all just came together in Rio, and everybody's expectations are way higher than what they used to be. I mean, I remember when Beijing happened and Kgotso Mokoena was a lone silver medalist who came back and with the sports minister, and they had a little quiet ceremony, and it was like no one was really paying attention to what had happened in Beijing. And fast forward years later, I mean, even the Paralympic Games in Rio the following year, they got one hell of a reception at OR Tambo, and it was like the Springboks coming back, you know, that kind of vibe. Did the Rio performance kind of set the bar way, way higher than it should? Or are we justified considering how many talented athletes we've got at this particular place and time?
You know, it's an interesting question because there are various, like, angles to it.
Mm.
And the one is that from 2009, as a result of the disaster in Beijing, SASCOC unlocked a lot of funding from Lotto.
Okay.
And a lot of that money at least found its way to athletes and to their preparation. And the success in London, which at that time was our best Olympics since readmission, 6 medals. At the time it was like 3 golds, although it got upgraded to 4 golds with Castor.
And then
the Russian being disqualified. And then Rio was like kind of built on that. Even though the funding didn't sustain at the same levels from London to Rio, the work that had been done and the advantages to people like Chad Leclerc, Cameron van der Berg, etc., all carried through till Rio. I mean, Rio, 10 medals, 5 of them were funded by SASCOC, basically, 5 of them weren't. And it kind of was almost a perfect storm, although a little bit of a tragedy if one considers that our best ever has been 10 medals. 1920, 1952, and then again 2016. It would have been great to have just got one more to make it our best.
And if you think
that we had 4 fourth places in Rio.
Ah, that's insane.
That
kind of shows you how close we've actually came to.
Yeah, exactly.
Even made it 12 or 13. Yeah.
Yeah, possibly, you know. So, yeah, it was a great Olympics, but I think Tokyo, I think we'll do well if we get kind of like half that, 6 medals.
You see, so that's exactly what I mean. Like, now the bar is set way higher. I don't think we're going to match what we did in Rio.
No.
Also, we've got problems with Wade not coming back. And what do you know about Wade Vaniekerk's injury? I believe it's a knee injury.
Yeah, no, it's the knee. I think the right knee that he was operated on. And the surgery that he had, it's quite common in rugby. And what often happens when those players come back, and they come back fine, but they come back slightly slower. But in that time that their knee's been out, they've worked on other parts of their body that may have been lacking in terms of upper body strength, whatever, that they can train with the injury. But they make up for that slight loss in speed. It's not a significant loss. And so Wade's challenge is to come back without a loss in speed. And that's going to be the big thing. And I think it's not just how he comes back from the injury. So that's the one element. The other element is when he's going to have his first proper competitive race. He raced twice last season early on, but they weren't proper races. And he was nowhere near to his like best. In terms of times. But so if he comes back, say, at SA Champs in April, and it's the second half of April, he's only going to have like 2 months to qualify, or to get himself into shape at least. I mean, he can qualify as a defending champ.
Get a qualification.
But you want to run a decent time.
You've got to
get not just your body right, you need to get your mind right. He's got to have that confidence.
Right. And where are the SA Champs going to be?
They're in Pretoria at Pilditch Stadium.
Okay. The old Pilditch. I once went there when I was still at Pretoria Boys High School. I did hurdles there. Got my ass kicked. But anyway, that's not about me. I wanted to talk about, as well as Caster Semenya. So she had lost her Court of Arbitration of Sports appeal, I guess, to the IAAF, where they're now forcing her to take medication that reduces, or supplements that reduce her testosterone levels if she wants to compete in the 800 meters. Now, she's gone for the 1,500?
No, she's supposed to take the medication for that as
even
well.
Even for that? So for any race that she competes in, or is she looking for a loophole somewhere there?
You see, the loophole would be to go down to 200 or go up to 5,000. But anything in between requires the medication.
Sheepers.
And that's the issue,
Do we know where she's leaning? I mean, she's put out a few posts where she said, no, she's not going to dope to alter her, you know, naturally, her natural production of testosterone. I mean, which is the fair thing. I mean, she shouldn't be forced to take medication to reduce whatever natural gifts that she's got to compete. But unfortunately, the court ruled against her. And
I mean, I think her only chance really is going to be the Swiss federal court, where she's appealing the CAS decision.
Okay. And that's the last throw of the dice.
I would think so.
And when can we know of that, or do you know when we're expecting a decision from them, and will it be in time for her to get ready for Tokyo, not Rio?
I think at the time that she went there, they said the decision should be early this year.
Okay.
And I mean, if she's kept up her training, which I believe she has, then that shouldn't be an issue if they clear her to run.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a problem, because that's a big miss. That's like two potential golds going potentially
down the drain. Well, one gold, the 800 gold.
Okay.
1500.
Not so much.
If her rivals are running fast.
Yeah.
They, she doesn't do those times.
Yeah.
And in the 400 as well, that's also a tough ask. Certainly. I think gold's out of her reach in the 400.
The 400's been tough for her, I think. But what's even tougher is not being allowed to compete, man. I think that's... Do you think that would have taken a toll on her on the mental side?
You know what? I think Casta is incredibly, incredibly strong mentally. I think she's hugely tough. What she's already gone through. And to have weathered that storm... As an 18-year-old in 2009.
I remember, yeah.
I mean, that
it's
was
just landing back
hectic.
In South Africa to the press and the IAAF and the poking and prodding and
the
testing.
Ridiculing by her rivals, by the public, etc., etc. She is, I think she's must be one of the strongest people.
11 years
out
since
there.
Now? Is it 2009?
Yeah, so it's nearly a full 11 years.
Yeah.
And so I think in terms of that, I think that's the least of her worries.
So she's been there, done that. I really hope for great news for Caster Semenya, because it means good news for Team South Africa as well as a whole. Now, looking at, I wanted to ask about weight, just to backtrack a little bit. Where did he sustain this injury? Because I heard that he was mucking about playing rugby
playing tag rugby at Newlands. As and a celebrity
some
stunt.
And
it was just the most ridiculous thing. Does his knee, and he hasn't been back for more than 2 years, basically.
Sheesh.
So, it's like... Yeah, I mean, it's a lesson to any professional athlete.
You stick to what you do, yeah.
And you don't muck about with other things,
I mean, I'm sure now it's not worth whatever it was that they were doing.
No.
Which was probably a publicity stand of some sort. And, I mean, he's no Cheslin Kobe. No offense.
Well, they apparently played in junior school together. But
so he should just stick to his lane, so to speak. But, yeah. On the swimming side, you wrote a story this past Sunday. By the time you're hearing this, this has been recorded on a Monday, right after David Isaacson's story on Midmar Stars in the Dark. It was in the Sunday Times, February 9th. If you missed it, you better get online and check that out. You talk about Chad Ho and Michelle Weber's open water swimming chances of making the Tokyo Olympics because they don't know what they need to do in order to qualify. SASCOC hasn't released the criteria yet. Surely by now, SASCOC should be able to tell swimmers and athletes what they need to do in order to qualify for Tokyo.
Yeah, well, I think what threw a spanner in the works there was that in November, late November, well, the sports federation's making up SASCOC called a special general meeting where they voted out the qualifying criteria that were already in place, yes.
Okay.
And those were the criteria that basically prevented people qualifying through Africa.
Mm.
You had to always take the more difficult option for most sports.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So
are they doing away with that now?
Well, for these Olympics, yeah.
Okay.
So now you can... it's basically just like adopting the criteria that the international federations draw up in collaboration with the IOC.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now the swimmers aren't sure, what do they have to do at the national champs? Do they have to finish top two, or do they just have to participate and then just merely qualify at a qualifying event? But then which qualifying event do they go to? For open water swimming, there's an African qualifier in Seychelles, and then there's an international qualifier in Japan, in Fukuoka.
Who funds their trips to these qualifiers?
You know, in some cases, they might be self-funded. Other times, it might be by Swimming South Africa. I actually don't know specifically in their cases. Also, don't forget, they're not necessarily going to be the only South Africans trying to qualify.
That's true, exactly. They might be the top of man and woman, but there'll be a whole lot of others.
I mean, there's a young guy who won Midmar, 20 years old. His name's Michael McGlynn.
Okay.
Who took off like a rocket, a torpedo, and Chad came second, couldn't catch it. Michael was gone, almost from the start, he was gone.
Yeah.
20 years old, he also does pool swimming, and so he's looking at like 1,500 meter freestyle possibly, or 800 freestyle.
Okay.
And the same in the women, also 20 years old, lady Robin Kinghorn. So they also got Olympic aspirations.
So they want to be there just as much as Chad and Michelle.
Yeah.
And our tried and tested guy, Chad Leclerc, how's he looking?
Well, we still got to see him in action, obviously, this season. I mean, properly, in proper action. You know, but the fact that at World Champs last year, where he went there with a bit of a groin issue, he's been diagnosed with a hernia that he's chosen not to have it operate, and do rehab. And he went there and he managed to eke out two bronzes in the 100 and the 200 butterfly. He's fairly promising. Olympics is a different kettle of fish. But the thing about Chad is he's a consummate racer. So he's always risen to the occasion. So hopefully he rises to the occasion in Tokyo. But it's not going to be easy.
Yeah,
it's not going to be easy.
No, I don't expect it will be. Finally, the there was a commission of inquiry into SASCOC, and there were findings that came out. We'll delve into the deeper conversation maybe at a much later stage. But did anything come out of those that commission and its findings that will impact the current games? You said earlier that the criteria that existed before SASCOC's qualifying criteria had been done away with. I'm not sure if that was part of the commission.
It wasn't part of the commission. Okay. That was the sports federations saying, no, we don't want to do it. Because for Rio, some of the sports federations were left out completely, and they were unhappy. And that, I think what happened in November was almost like a hangover from that.
As far as the commission's concerned,
SASCOC has made changes as recommended by the commission, or the committee, as it was called, and as well as a couple of other changes, almost like demanded by the sport minister. He wants early elections. He doesn't want the board that's been in charge of SASCOC to still be in charge going into the Olympics.
Right, right.
And, you know, SASCOC hasn't had lotto funding and government funding like it used to for a while. So I think once those things are done, it's going to impact on SASCOC, some of these things. Hopefully it doesn't impact on the athletes. That's the main thing.
That's what I'm hoping for, that it doesn't trickle down. And, you know, this close to a major, major event is, for me, it's always a little bit of a worry. I'm glad that SASCOC's house is getting cleaned up, but, you know, the athletes, for me, need to come first.
Well, I mean, there have been issues. Already last year, there were some delayed payments because SASCOC, not having a lot of money, has to kind of rob Paul to pay Peter, which has also irritated the sport minister because they used money that was earmarked for an entry fee into an event in Botswana, and they spent it on something else. I assume they didn't spend it on a party. They spent it on other creditors, etc. But
you assume. But you never know.
So they've got this kind of dilemma, and they weren't always being able to pay the athletes on time. And I know some sports have been struggling.
Yeah.
And yeah, so one hopes that, you know, that gets sorted out quickly. But equally, having said that, to come up with the money now, for argument's sake, if a whole lot of money was made available now,
ew,
it's too late, you know. If okay, you're not ready now, you're not going to be
money's
ready
not
for...
Money's not going to make a difference. No. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No.
All right, awesome stuff. David Isaacson, thank you very much. He's definitely an authority on the conversation regarding Olympic sports in South Africa and across the world. I mean, it's a huge conversation. We couldn't even talk about the fastest standard marathon thing that Nike did with Eliud Kipchoge, which I wanted to ask as far as, you know, why wasn't it, you know, but we'll get to that conversation at a much later stage, hoping to have some more of these conversations, especially as we get closer to the games in Tokyo. Are you going?
Yes, yes, I am.
All right, okay. Enjoy Japan. I was there for the first week of the Rugby World Cup. Need I remind you again? Yeah, I'm sure you're going to have a great time. I had a fabulous time in Tokyo. It was just for a week, though, but I had a great, great time. All right, that's the latest Sports Live podcast episode. Yeah, it's been a great conversation with David Isaacson. For more, guys, please go to our podcast page. It's on timeslive.co.za. Click on the multimedia tab, and you'll see all the stuff that we've done in the recent past, which I think was great. Of course, this is a SAB Sports Media Award-winning podcast. Yeah. We got one of those in the bank. So we're doing something really great, and hopefully you guys enjoy what we do. David Isaacson, thanks for joining us. And that wraps it up for this week. That's it from me, Sboom Tigeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, Castbox, Pocket Cast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag Sports Live. Share your comments with us at Times Live or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the Tiso Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Ninawa Mchana Ngogo. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the Sports Live podcast, it's goodbye for now.